To whom much is given, much is expected. This verse we find in Luke in the Bible reminds us that if we're given gifts or talents or wealth or any kind of blessing, we should use those things to bless others and even bless ourselves. You know, JFK was fond of referencing that, and he and his brother Bobby were all about using what they had to help others, help the disadvantaged in life. And I recently finished watching the documentary on Bobby Kennedy on Netflix. If you have not seen it, please go watch it. Anyway, today I have a special guest, Dr. Catherine Zeisner. We did an interview a couple days ago, and I haven't posted it yet because in the meantime, I had a ceiling collapse and had to move a bunch of rock in my driveway. But thank you for joining me for this episode for Musings from the Middle of Nowhere. And without any further ado, oh my gosh, what a cliche phrase. Here is my interview with Dr. Catherine Zeisner. Ah, Dr. Z, third time's a charm.
I'm so sorry, but that was my husband because I had called him to check my earbuds.
It's fine. No, it's good to know if anybody uses this feature in the future, you must silence your calls, your incoming calls, your notifications. Otherwise, you will get kicked off. So here we go. All right.
Sorry, funny buddy.
Professor on TikTok. We met through TikTok. I feel like TikTok has given me an opportunity to bless others. And I know those of you who listen to this podcast are like those true core followers of mine. And I think that you will enjoy what Dr. Z has to share with us today. Now, I'm sitting here as we talk with my Wait For It cup from Hamilton. And I feel like that applies to the quote we're talking about today from Luke, which is, to whom much is given, much is expected. And I feel like I've been waiting for the opportunity my whole life to give back in abundance what I have been given. And honestly, TikTok has given me that ability, you know, or that platform to do that. How do you feel about that?
100%. I finally have an opportunity to shine a light on people who I haven't had a chance to appreciate as much as I should have in my career. I've always believed that I'm a servant leader and that I serve others with a purpose, and then being able to help others discover what their purpose is. And I just think it's 100% kismet that you and I somehow found each other. That quote resonated with each other. And I tell people, we're both on the same sides of the same coin. And I love the fact that you're a parent and I get to be an educational leader, and both of us want the same thing, which is love and kindness and trusting relationships in families and in education. And I'm just so excited to brainstorm with you how we can help everyone.
Oh, I understand. And, you know, I grew up with a dad who was a superintendent of schools and an educator, and he was so educated in the area that when he would take like post-grad classes, the professors would actually have him teach the classes because he'd been, you know, he was like in his 60s by then, and he'd just been in education so long, he knew what to do, you know? And so, and my mom was a high school, she was a school psychologist and a guidance counselor. And then I taught for about 15 years, anywhere from kindergarten through, you know, graduate school. And so I have a unique perspective in that I no longer teach, but I understand kind of both sides of the coin. You know, I understand what the administrators are trying to do, what teachers are trying to do, and counselors are trying to do, and what parents are trying to do.
Yeah. Everyone's trying to educate.
Yeah. And I've hated on educators quite a bit in some of my TikToks because, you know, I've not recently had that good of experience with them. And so when I found you, I was like, she's it. That's what I want administrators to be doing. And I absolutely adore you and love you. So let's get back to, you know, how I kind of run these is, and most people, you know, anybody who's familiar, I kind of introduce the quote, and then, you know, I've done that before this recording, and then kind of talk through how that applied to my childhood, my relationships as an adult, and then share some poetry. So basically I'm just going to have you kind of talk about, you know, why that quote when you were young, you know, why that resonated with you first of all. And if I feel the need to interject, I will, but if you'll share that with us, that would be awesome.
Yeah. So I come from a wonderful Canadian family. I have two parents who are still alive. My dad worked at a university as an administrator for 30 years. He taught and ran the a phys ed program. My mom was able to be home with us for a long time till I was about in grade six. And then she was one of those first women who went out and got a career. And she modeled for us what it meant to give back to the world, plus be a fantastic parent. And I've just been so lucky to have these people who showed me what it means that when you are lucky, when you have had a lot of education, when you are respectful, you go back into the world and do what you can to make the day, the moment, the month, a situation better for others. So I believe in modeling. We can't change other people. We can wish all kinds of things for other people. We can tell them to do things. We can wish it. We can ask, but we can't change others. The only thing we can do for others is model appropriate behavior and things that we wish. And my parents did that for us. And then I'm trying to do that as an educator.
And, you know, I just want to interject here, because a lot of times, you know, teens, kids will come to me and say, how do I get my parents to do this? And I say, you know, you can't change them. No. All you can do is speak to them without emotion, speak to them respectfully, yep. Tell them what you need and want. And, you know, it's either going to get better or worse, but you can't change anybody else. So you do you, yep. And you be the best you can be.
That's right. And the speaker truth. The other thing is often when we are upset, confused, frustrated, we exaggerate. And it's so important to gather ourselves and speak our truth in a very calm, prepared manner, because yelling just creates more yelling. And so the opportunity to have a mature, calm conversation from a perspective of truth allows for other people hopefully to hear and listen more actively.
Absolutely. And
I just wish, yeah.
And not use those absolutes that we always use. That I just did it. Those, you know, yeah. You always do this. I always, you know, you never
do this.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. It's just so it's heartbreaking in you know, in marriage and relationships when someone, in comparative language, you're just like your mother, you're just like your brother. And in some cases, that's great. I'd love to be known like my mother. But there's lots of times when children are compared to a sibling who they know that the parent is disrespectful to. So I call that terminal language, sort of that's the end of the rope, that's the end of the line. It's so important to not use always, never, everyone, all the time, because it's not true. It's like as simple as you never take the garbage out. Well, we've been married for 27 years. You're telling me I've never taken the garbage out in 27 years?
Right.
That just ruins a relationship so quickly. And as a parent, if you are yelling at your child and saying you've never done this, that is so disheartening that the heart breaks literally and figuratively, and very hard to recover from that kind of language.
100% true. And, you know, side note, you know, I teach kids how to like ace multiple choice tests, you know, like ACT and SAT. And one of the things I tell them is, never is never the answer. Always is never the answer. Always is always wrong. Anytime you're taking a standardized test, though, if that language is included, it's never. And that's the odd thing. I say that's the only absolute you're ever going to use. You never answer that question, because there's this tiny minute chance that in some chance it might be, you know, correct. And so, yeah, that's why in relationships, we can't use, in positive relationships, we can't use that kind of language either if we want to keep up positive communication.
And just being more conscientious of it. Like nobody's perfect. We're going to say it. You know, and there's, you know, I always loved you. There's lovely sayings where I would always want someone to think that. But just being more conscientious of those kinds of words, if we can just catch ourselves a little bit sooner, or at least after you've said it, say, wait, that's not true. I'm sorry. Let me change that. Then the relationship is going to be healthier. And all we want is to have healthy relationships. No relationship is perfect. No person is perfect, but we can certainly have more respectful, trusting relationships if we're a little more careful with our word choice.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was thinking of the Whitney Houston song, you know, I Will Always Love You. I think Dolly Parton sang it too. But the truth is, to say that even that absolute, I will always love you, it'd be nice. But the truth is, that's not going to happen unless we do a little work to keep up that relationship.
That's great. And on both sides.
Yeah.
We have to do the work too. That's another thing. Often we sit and wish and hope that the other person will change, will see, will understand, will grow. And we can't do that. We have to take the lead. We have to be very conscientious. And that's hard because we want the other person to hear and see us and be something possibly they can't be at this time. So this is about leadership. This is about you taking the lead. This is about you being the more mature person. This is about you being the person who's being the lifelong learner.
Oh,
this is about
yes.
you being the reflective person. And that's not easy, especially when we're emotional, especially if we feel that we are so hurt and beaten down. But that's okay, because then we can have the chance to go up.
Oh, I love it. Now, we are going down such an amazing track, but I want to backtrack just a second. And I want you to think, when was it that you recognized in your childhood that you had been given much, you know, or that much was expected of you? When did that really ring true for you?
I can think of a couple of times where my family took us to some wonderful church events. And I remember there were lots of other children there and it was very chaotic. And I just looked around the room and I thought, I have an opportunity here to make this event more fun for everyone if I took all the children and we did some fun games in another room. And I specifically remember taking, I might have been a little bit older than the other kids, but there was a whole bunch of balloons and we just started balloon races and walking like animals. And I remember my mom, who was sitting at all the other tables with the adults, just so impressed with the fact that I took the lead to see a situation that was kind of chaotic and to make it enjoyable. The parents could have conversations. The kids were playing really, really well with each other. And I just felt that I was a leader for the first time in my life. And it made me want to work with kids, obviously. It made me want to be someone who was creative. It made me want to be someone who could see a situation and make it better. And that's always stuck out for me. It was a very short little sort of church event. But
right.
I just remember thinking, everyone's having a good time because I was able to control and make it fun for everyone. And then that just led for me moving to being a lifeguard and going to camps and wanting to just learn how to do the right thing. Taking the high road and always doing the right thing. It was a lot of work. All the events I've ever done, it's a lot of work to be in charge and to serve others. But knowing that you provided a better situation for others, that sense of pride has always driven me, especially in myself. I loved it. Of course, my parents have always... I've been very lucky to have been told how proud my parents of me, but the day you're able to say I'm proud of myself is the day I think that your brain kind of clicks into a very healthy place.
So, you know, my dad used to always say, we all grow up eventually, Samantha. It just takes some of us longer than others. And I often feel like my toxic mother kept me from growing up, because when you relate that story, I think about being 6 years old. And I won this amazing drawing. There was this huge regional drawing for this massive stuffed stocking at Christmas time, right? And my family didn't get out of the middle of nowhere much, but we had gone to this big town about an hour or two away, and my brothers had all put my name in the drawing. Well, for some reason, I won it. And, you know, my brother brought it home to me, and my mom was like, well, you're going to pick 5 things out of here, Samantha, and you're going to give the rest of this stocking away because you have more than other children, and you're going to have jewels in your crown in heaven. And, you know, as a 6-year-old, I might have even been 5. I was thinking, but wait, mom, I won it, you know?
Yeah.
And I felt like she always tried to like force me into, you know, I understand that she was trying to set an example for me. Right. But it seemed like my mom just never let me enjoy something that I had done. Like, it was always my responsibility to give someone else, you know, something instead of like forcing me to do it. Like, why don't you, you know, like you do it. Right. And that my
yeah.
parents were pretty good examples, but you know, I felt like for the longest time, anytime I did something my mother wanted me to do, I was like betraying myself almost because I didn't want to be like her, you know,
right.
because she
yeah.
was a, she was a talk the talk, not a walk the walk person, at least in right. the house, you know? And so
yeah.
It's kind of interesting how only after she passed away, did I really feel like I could truly come into myself. And so sometimes, you know, it's so interesting to hear how, you know, your mother was very proud of you, but it's because you took the initiative, right? And you felt
yes.
good about it, but we can't
yes.
really force kids into being, you know, that positive
no.
role model for others. We have to let them find it, you know?
Yes. And shine a big light on it when they do it, even in the smallest.
Oh, sense. Yes.
Opening a door for someone, if you're out shopping together, picking up something that's on the ground, and that, like, taking the biggest spotlight as a parent and saying, thank you for doing that. No one asked you to do that. And you did that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love this idea about shining a light on others. And as a parent, finding the smallest of things, because it is the small things that build up to build
yeah.
very, very healthy adults.
So what do you say to people who say, oh yeah, well, if kids are complimented all the time, they're just gonna, you know, that's just too much for them. They need to be criticized. Cause I hear a lot of parents say, oh, we can't just praise them all the time. That gives them a false mm-hmm. sense of, you know, they're good or whatever.
Yeah, I think it depends on what you're complimenting. I would say things that are superficial certainly don't drive kids to want to do more. But things that are innate human healthy qualities, such as values, if you see your kid displaying a phenomenal value, such as initiative, caring, compassion, that's what you want to shine the spotlight on. Of course, everyone believes their child is beautiful and you want to tell them they're beautiful physically and, you know, the gorgeous hair and gorgeous eyes. That's wonderful. But seeing your child show compassion and empathy, I would say that's where you want to really take the opportunity to say, that's who we are as a family. That's who you're going to be as a person. That's what we need to do in order to create a better world.
Oh, absolutely. Shining a light on positive behaviors
yeah.
instead of,
yeah.
you know, those superficial things. You know, I once had to follow through an IEP that someone had written where we were to compliment the kids' clothing every day. And I thought, what? And she said, well, yeah, it's something that makes him feel good about himself. I'm like, okay, he's completely disruptive in my class. And I'm supposed to say, I like your shirt. How about, you know, oh, you know, like walking over and whispering in his ear, I really like the way you're contributing to class today.
Yes.
You know, but that wasn't part of the IEP. That didn't
wow.
count. You know, and then they have these little checklists you're supposed to check off. Oh, did you do this? Did you, you know, and so they check in later. Did you compliment him on his clothes? No, I didn't. I told
no.
him he was behaving well. And I said, well, that's not on the IEP. I'm like, I don't understand sometimes how educators, you know, just squeeze, you know, like weird that thing out, you know, like,
yeah, yeah. Unless it was a child who really struggled with some, what do you call it when things touch you and they're very uncomfortable and they like to not have clothes on?
Oh, like, exactly. Think, that
right,
makes sense to me, right?
Yeah, like thanks for coming to school with clothes on because you're very sensitive to those things.
That, right.
Very, right. Or I had some kids who could only come in pajamas because they felt really comfortable in pajamas.
Right.
And then when they came for their grad photos, they put a nice shirt on.
I would say
that's a very special situation.
Absolutely. You know, like I remember I had a teacher in high school who, when the boys wore ties on game day, he'd always give them 5 bonus points. And I thought, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm trying to teach them that you get rewarded for, you know, dressing up and taking that extra time just to look nice and say, hey, I represent my school. And, you know,
yeah.
I got it. And those 5 bonus points, you know, didn't mean much, but they did, you know what I'm saying? Meant a lot to that kid. And
yeah.
that is the kind of situation I can see where, yeah, you know, like reinforcing, because that's also a behavior choice too. Dressing
yes.
nice to represent your school is a
yes.
behavior choice, not just
well,
a clothing choice.
It is showing the world you're proud, your pride. And I do love it when kids who are very creative with how they look, I just love that because you're showing your pride. And, but that goes back to knowing the child. And often we look at someone who we don't know and judge by the way they look. And that's not fair because we don't know what brought them to look the way they do that day.
Absolutely not.
But when we know our students, my favorite is when they get a haircut. Often, because you and I both taught sort of middle school for a
yes.
while. And often kids who are having a tough time, and they grow their hair long, or they put it in front of their eyes or something.
Ugh, yes.
They're just, you know, because they want to cover up. They're trying to sort of hide a little bit, which we totally understand. That's very normal at that age. But the day they get their hair cut or their hair out of their eyes, and you can see that that sparkle is back. I used to make a huge deal about
absolutely.
That because I'm proud that they want to be seen.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when I used to coach speech, one of my requirements was that, and it was back in the like 90s when girls wore these wispies hanging out in front of their face. And one of the requirements to be on the speech team was your hair, boy or girl, had to be back because, you know, you want the judge to see your full face. And they didn't get it at first, right? And right. But they understood, you know, if they, and I didn't police it, right? I was like, you know, if you want to walk into a round and wear your hair down, I'm not going to know it. But I want, and then these comments would come back. Why is your hair in your face? Whatever. And I didn't even have to say, I told you so. They would say, look, see, I don't know that I won that round because my hair was in my face. Like, well, you know, you make your decision next time. Right. So it wasn't really a requirement. It was just a suggestion because I always wanted kids to know to present yourself to the world, you know, positively, you know, when you get that haircut, when you pull that hair back and you say, hey world, I'm here, you know, listen to me. Right. But I do understand the flop, the covering of the face,
100%.
You know,
or a hat.
I get
totally
it.
Totally understand it. Yes.
When you don't feel well, man, you don't want anybody to see your face.
Yes. But it also shows that you're starting to want the world to see you, that you're showing that little bit of confidence, and it's not forever. That's the other thing, right? I don't know about you, but I come home and my hair comes down, my pajamas come on, and I'm a hot mess. Because it's time to sort of check out. But when you're out in the world, it is nice to be able to show people that you want to engage with them. You want to be seen. But I totally understand it's scary.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I know I've basically had the same haircut since I was, I don't know, a freshman in high school, you know. And at times, you know, I always wore it like halfway down my face, you know, when I was like in high school and stuff or in college. But as I get older, it's the same haircut, but I try to keep it off my face, you know. I remember that time when I just kind of wanted control over who saw my emotions, you know. So I identify with that. I get it. I don't want to judge somebody who does that, but I sure want to say, hey, man, good to see you're here. I see you today. I see you being proud of who you are.
That's right. That's right. It's normal, but it is nice every once in a while to just show the world that you're feeling well, you're feeling confident, you want to be seen. And it just makes me really happy when kids take, and that's a risk. That's a risk to get your hair cut. It's a risk to wear a headband or to take your hat off. I totally get it. But try it and see that. But then, you know what? It's interesting because some kids then don't want that attention.
I know. So isn't it crazy?
So as parents and as educators, it's about knowing the student again and having that relationship. And sometimes it's a whisper. I'll walk over and go, I love your haircut.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. Or if I know that student and we have a great relationship, we can tell a fun little joke about, are you trying to impress Mrs. Eisner?
Right.
But it's about knowing that student. That's not about embarrassing. It's about recognizing that they're taking a chance or that they're trying to show the world that they're being more confident or want to be seen.
Oh, there's nothing more powerful in a classroom or in a hallway than whispering something to a kid, whether they're misbehaving or whether they're positive behaving, right?
Yes.
Because it's amazing. Yeah, we kind of mentioned that. It's just, you know, because it's not taking that power position. It's kind of just like recognizing, you know, and hey, you might want to, gosh, I love the whisper. I just can't even believe how strong that is.
Yeah. And in a lot of my TikToks, you'll see that I'm not yelling. I am sometimes whispering because when you whisper, people have to listen and they have to lean in a little bit. I've yelled and I've really reflect on some awful conversations I've had where I've heated up and yelled and it's just not respectful and it just doesn't accomplish what you need. But being able to have a calm, cool, collected conversation and not embarrassing, like in the hall, if somebody's doing something, you can acknowledge it in a very calm, whisperful way, because any teen does not want to be centered out. A especially if they're misbehaving. So a very calm little whisper, or even sometimes a look. We all have a teacher look.
Right.
And a good look too, a little wink or a hi, how are you, or a cute smile. There's lots of ways to acknowledge people without embarrassing them. But I teach my classroom management students about the power of the whisper. Yelling only makes more yelling.
Oh, it's true. And you know, they respect you so much more. I mean,
I hope
much more when you whisper. And you know, for me, and you know, like basically my platform on TikTok is all about positive parenting and trying to help kids who are in toxic situations. And you know, that's the same message is for parents as well as educators. When you whisper, when you bring it down and don't just scream or yell, it has so much more power. And there, every once in a while, you do have to raise your voice, you know, but I say limit it to 2 minutes a day, you know, limit. If you're going to raise your voice, you got 2 minutes and then stop. Otherwise it just escalates it. Right.
One word. Like kids will know if you say their full name.
Yes.
Like Samantha Ann. Right.
Right.
They know it's time to buckle down and the conversation's taking a turn. Even one word, hey, that's enough.
Yeah. There's,
because I find when people start yelling, they're starting to speak without thinking. And that's when curse words come out.
Oh,
that's
right.
When some of that terminal language comes out. That's when some of those accusations come out.
And see, I guess for me, my 2 minutes is not like a scream like I remember my mother, but it's more like, you know, if I'm in a lecture or raise my voice above my normal speaking voice, I limit it to 2 minutes. Like any lecture I give or what, but you're right. Like that's not an expletive, that interjection, hey, just really, yeah.
Because I don't want people speaking without thinking. And there are some videos on TikTok where I've seen some parents and, you know, that you've shown a lot of that where parents are just letting loose. And what they're saying doesn't make sense, and it's so disrespectful, and it's not true, and they're just talking without thinking. And I find when you whisper, you have to think a little bit before you speak. And once those words are out, man, you cannot swallow them back in.
No.
And yelling to me just becomes this uncontrollable, unconscious stream of words. And if I could just get the world to stop yelling. Oh my goodness. And don't get me wrong, I've been a yeller.
I know.
I said some things to my spouse and friends which are so ridiculous because I spoke without thinking, because I came from an emotional place too. You know, we could talk all about, you know, take 2 minutes before you even engage in the conversation if you know you're heated. If not 2 hours.
Oh yeah.
Say, let me get back to you on that.
I ask my daughter sometimes I need you to just go in your room, shut your door. We're going to talk about this when we've both kind of cooled down. If she starts to ask questions and I start to, like, honey, we both need a couple hours. So before we talk about this, it doesn't mean, you know, our positions are going to change. We just need to talk about this in a couple hours because it's important to you, important to me. And that kind of gives us both that space to be a little more logical, you know?
Yeah. Or get a snack or have a nap.
Right.
Or take a bath.
Right. Anything. And that is true. Yeah. I tell her in the meantime, I would like you to take a bath, you know, watch some Netflix, maybe take a little nap. Exactly.
Yeah. I like to say, what's your reset button? Let's both go hit our reset button. And, you know, hangry is a term we could say. My mom still says it to me. Are you hungry, tired, or lonely? With it, when she can see that I'm starting to get emotional. And as a kid, I hated it when she said that to me, because I'm like, no, I'm not tired. No, I'm not hungry. No, I'm not lonely. And she was always right.
Always.
And I'm just one of those people that needs a lot of sleep, and I need naps, and I need to have my blood sugar healthy. But that's because she knew me. My mom knew me. She knew me as a baby. She knew me as a teen. And even to this day, I'm able to say that to my spouse and to my friends. Listen, I'm not 100% right now. Let me hit the reset button and then let's rejoin this conversation, or let's get back together in a little bit. And if people can, it's about being conscious of knowing yourself.
But I wish people were more accepting of your need to do that. I felt like when I was in the work world, you know, and I asked for that kind of space, people would get offended. You know, wait a minute, you can't give me a hug right now. You can't give me 5 minutes right now. No, because I want to say, I just finished grading 47 essays. And if I don't go have a cup of coffee and I don't know, walk around the block, I might just lose my mind. So, you know, but I feel like we're so pressured to always be on and always be available and always interact with peers that, you know, when we say, hey, I need a minute, people are almost offended by the fact that you know you need a minute to regroup. Why is that?
Right. I think it's because we haven't done it enough. And then often we forget. So people will say, do you have a minute? And I'll say, no, I don't. But then it's very important. I have a book that I write in, make sure I go back and talk to Mrs. B about that situation and that I follow through. And that when we do come back together, it is a healthy conversation. Often we'll say no, and then it's dropped and the person feels disrespected.
Right.
As opposed to honoring the fact that, yes, I will get back to you, but I need to hit my reset button. I've got three things to take off my plate first. You are a priority to me. You're on the list. I think it's about the fact that sometimes we don't go back. We don't revisit it. And so, especially at work, I think we are, I think many organizations are starting to recognize what mental health looks
yes.
like. And I'm talking about health, like things that make
exactly.
you healthier, those breaks, those naps, those comfortable chairs, more light, opportunities to take days off or chunks of days off or work a different kinds of schedule. And those are the kinds of companies, organizations, people we want to put a spotlight on. They recognize the world is very busy. Our brains are going 24 hours a day. And being able to say, here's the creative way we're going to give you that opportunity. But I think mostly because people forget and what's that? It's almost double trouble, because if I give people the minute when they're saying, do you have a minute? It's not going to be good. I'm not 100%. I am hungry. I need to go to the bathroom. I need a second. Like, as a principal, I have a funny TikTok I'm about to make about people just saying, do you have a sec? Do you have a sec? Do you have a minute? Do you have a sec? No, I don't.
right.
but I will have 5 minutes for you in a couple minutes if you just let me go pee.
Right, right.
And it sounds so stupid, but it's amazing just having a peace for a second, shut the door, wash my hands, put some water on my face. Now I'm available
right.
to you. It's that idea of how can I be present for you? And if I've got 26 things in my brain, I am not present for you. And if it just lets me go get a coffee and a drink of water and a walk and a pee break, and I can then be present to you, imagine how much more trusting and respectful that relationship can be. But I have to be honest. I have to say no, Rick, sometimes, which is so hard.
You know, I just want to clone you and put you in every school in the United States, because, you know, and in saying that, I've never been one who liked cookie cutter, you know, situations, right, with teachers or administrators or whatever. But I feel like your voice needs to be heard throughout the United States so much. And I think part of the reason you might be just so empathetic and so positive and see things in a different light is that you're not from, you know, the United States. You started in Canada. And, you know, for some reason,
yeah.
you're right. For some reason, we just have this odd, you know, good old boy system entrenched in education, especially still here in the Midwest, you know, where things just really haven't changed for 50 years. I mean, they try to change, you know, they bring in new curriculum or whatever, but it, you know, as one old teacher told me, and she was an old at the time, she's like, you know, just wait a couple years. We'll be back to doing the old thing we were. And, you know, it just repeats itself. It's just a cycle of repeat, you know, nothing ever really changes. We just kind of try. And so how do you think that, you know, coming into the United States and being a principal here really is different than what you've experienced maybe in native Canada?
Well, the big thing is America is so much bigger than Canada. You know, you're such a not size
regionally too. There are a lot different.
Yeah,
you know, areas.
Yeah, very, 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 very so. And I love being Canadian. I will always be Canadian. I'm very proud of it. We do have a lovely perspective on the world. We do have a very large world view. You know, we teach world history, some Canadian history, but a lot of world. So we were able to put ourselves in other people's shoes a little bit more. We all recognize that we've come from somewhere else. Our families came from Europe and all over the world, beautiful places. And then you don't see yourself as anything other than Canadian.
Can I tell you a little quick anecdote? The
yeah.
oddest thing
yeah.
about many Midwestern states is the one thing they require to teach in their state is not world history. It's the state's history. Now, I kind of
yeah.
get that, but it's a little odd that, wait. You don't care if they have world history. You don't care if they have world civilizations. You don't care if they have a worldview, but you want your teachers to know the history of the state they're teaching in. which to me is like, I get it, but don't you think they'll learn it just by living here? I mean, I just find that kind of, it just seems to be so ethno and geocentric.
And that can be a piece. It's this idea of exposure. Let's expose all students to everything as much as we possibly can. There are amazing stories out there from other countries and other continents. And then do some comparative. There's so many fantastic YouTube videos in which, and my favorite is Family Meals Around the World. And it's a short YouTube clip of a picture of a family. And I'm going to say it's 50 different countries. And for a student to be able to see the clothing that the families are wearing, what a family table looks like in other countries, what the food looks like, and how much they're eating and how they're eating. And then to have the conversation to compare it to what's your reality.
Oh, and absolutely. Yeah. You know, like when I was in grad school in the 90s, and it was kind of the beginning of the whole idea of intertextualization and texts being anything from, you know, pictures, words, communication, whatever, just, you know, that whole idea,
immediate
anything. And, you know, that whole idea of intertextualizing leading to greater understanding. Anytime we can put this text against this text and then this text or this picture, it just helps us understand everything so much better.
Yes. Imagine if everyone had empathy. Like if I was to wish for one trait for everyone, I'm talking just be empathetic.
Absolutely.
Meaning you take a beat before you judge another person. You're able to say, I wonder what their story is.
But see, absolutely. But that comes from that ability to compare. And I don't mean compare in terms of better than or less than, but intertextualize, to look at this situation and look at another situation, say, hey, maybe they don't, or they do, or just kind of just an awareness of what people go through really leads to empathy.
That's all I want for people, because no one is better than anyone else. There's no way anybody can say that is the best person.
And here, that leads kind of back to the to whom much is given, much is expected thing, right? And so
that we have to rise above. We are the people that have to rise
and
above.
And see, I know you used that at the beginning of your dissertation. And, you know, there's a counter to that in a little way, in that, you know, I think some of us maybe were put in better situations or, you know, whatever, but I like to, and I think you like to see that we are all given so much. If we could just kind of look outside ourselves and find someone else to bless.
Yes. I love it's the simple saying around Christmas holidays about it's better to give than receive. And I'm not just saying something that's materialistic, literally time, love, patience, listening. All free, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I have, it costs $0 to be kind, you know, and I have these little coins that say it costs $0 to be kind on them with my at middle of nowhere 0102 on the other hand. And, you know, I give them out sometimes and it's like, here, it just, this is a coin to remind you, you don't have to spend this. It costs $0 to be kind to somebody. And, you know, I think even when I get stopped in public and I get fangirled quite a bit, it's kind of been a bizarre situation, but you know, like Lucy and I were at dinner last night and I bet there were 8 to 10 people who, you know, smiled, waved, wanted a picture, whatever. But there was this mom who came over. She said, I don't know why, but my daughter really wants a picture with you. Would you mind taking a picture with her? And I said, no, bring her over, you know. And Lucy's kind of gotten used to the fact she has to share me a little bit, which is, you know, been a little bit of an adjustment for her. But this little girl came over and I said, you know, what's your name? Ailey. I said, oh, that's a beautiful name. She sat down next to me. And and her mom took a picture. And I just, thank you so much. You know, don't ever be afraid to say hi to me in public. I'm nice. And, you know, I'll love you up, you know. And kids will sometimes go back and post those on their Instagram and share them on their stories. And I don't catch them all because, you know, I can't catch every message. I can't. But my followers help me bless other people because I give them a positive message. And then I see these little communications in these videos like, hey, I'm going through the same thing. Yes. Isn't that wonderful that this platform gives us an ability not just to not just to touch people ourselves, but to give other people an ability to touch other, you know, to I shouldn't say touch, to, you know, to like support.
Authentic connection. I like to use the term authentic connection.
Yes. To have an authentic connection with somebody. Connection. And even if somebody who's struggling gets a couple seconds of an authentic connection, you know, I mean, it can just be the difference between feeling like a total failure and feeling like, okay, I'm worthy. You know, I'm worthy. I'm worthy.
I really realize that. I love it when people duet my videos. It's just so much fun because it's that sense of interaction. Because sometimes in TikTok, you're putting stuff out and you don't know how it resonates. And a lovely young girl did this really cute duet. And I always respond to the duets if I see them. Like you, I get a lot.
Right.
But I responded about how cute she was and how adorable it was and how appreciative I am. And she sent back just this glowing message. And then it really hit me. I kind of started to tear up that she felt seen.
Yes.
And I don't know what her story was. I don't know what's going on in her life, but it just felt to me the fact that someone saw her. And I thought, if that gets her through the next hour, the next day, the next week, I'm going to keep doing this. You don't know if how long Isla's going to have that picture of you together, if she's going to blow it up and put it in her room, and she's just going to continue to look at it. And I remember even an Oprah Winfrey show once where she gave away all her clothes, and a woman said that she got Oprah's shoes and she stood in Oprah's shoes in her house so that she could feel it. And I remember Oprah got really choked up, which she doesn't do very often. And I just thought, that woman felt for a moment seen.
Yes.
And how many of our teen and tween friends feel invisible, even worse, that they shouldn't be seen? I hate that saying about children, you know, should be seen and not heard.
I know.
We want to hear you. What you have to say is very important. How you're feeling is very important. And as adults, we have to stop and listen and give them the time and give them the platform and teach them how to respectfully share their feelings, acknowledge that it's normal. Oh my goodness, if I was to go down and reflect back on me as a tween and a teen, I thought I was weird, crazy, stupid, strange, ugly, no talent. And I look back and I just thought, holy smokes, I was a good kid. I was great with my family. I tried my best. I was a pretty good teammate. But at the time, you don't realize it because there's no platform to discuss the feelings.
No. You know, when we were growing up, we didn't have that ability really to support. And I had a friend from high school reach out after she saw my Mother's Day post just about how abusive my mom was. And despite the fact, you know, in her older age, you know, we kind of reconnected a little bit. But, you know, she said, I had no idea. Why did we not support each other instead of judge each other? I was like, because we really didn't have a platform to share how much we were all in pain. You know?
Yeah, that's the best. Social media to me, and I know lots of people hate social media, but to me, because there's so many and I love a variety, you can express yourself. And a TikTok is such a wonderful place to express yourself in a fun, creative, funny, poignant way in which you may have others be able to say, holy smokes, maybe if they feel that way, it's okay that I feel this way.
You know, people ask people.
That's me as a principal.
Sorry. No, I was just going to say, please, you know, people ask, how do you blow up on TikTok? You know, be relevant and people will identify with you. And that's the number one thing, you know, the number one thing is that people relate to you and you are value added to their lives.
Yes. Yes. And you're speaking your truth. I use the word authentic.
Absolutely. And you have to be authentically you. You know, you have to be
authentic. People can tell if you're faking. People can tell, you know, I'm not going to dance on TikTok because people know I'm not a dancer.
Well, you know, kids will ask me to duet things or they'll ask me to talk about certain things. And, you know, early on, I kind of tried to do that a little bit and the videos didn't do well. And so now I just say, you know, I'm not familiar enough with that topic. I can't get passionate about something that I don't, you know, people are going to see through the fact that I don't really believe what I'm saying, or I don't really understand what I'm saying. You know, I feel like whatever I talk about on TikTok, I better have lived it or seen it or understood it, you know?
Yeah. And we're both, I'm 51.
Yeah, I'm pretty dang close. I'm almost there, yes.
Yeah, but I, you know, I've worked in 8 or 9 different school organizations and buildings. I've served thousands and thousands of people. A lot of people know me. And there's, you know, I got a great text today from my former librarian who just made me so happy. She goes, "That's totally you. Now the world knows our Catherine." Aww. And I love the fact that she sees that it's still me. Even some of my former students from my former university, they're like, "Yes, that." And she's even funnier in real life.
Aww.
That makes me happy that I'm presenting myself. And I am a crier. I wear my heart on my sleeve. I am a very sensitive person because my friends were like, "Take those crying videos down." And I'm like, "No, that's how it's I real. Feel. That's how I felt." And it those resonate with people too, because I'm normal. I'm healthy. I'm flawed. I fail. I question things I do. Yes, I'm funny and I'm trying to be creative and I'm trying to show how to solve problems as an administrator and how hard it is to be an administrator. But you got to take some of the tough looks with some of the good looks too.
100%. And, you know, I think people identify with us when we show our range of emotions, you know, and it makes us more real too, you know?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Listen, Catherine, Dr. Z, that funny professor, you're just, I could talk to you for hours, but I know your time is limited. My time is limited. So I'd like to kind of, you know, maybe we can do this again in a month or so. You know, I'd love
absolutely.
To.
Absolutely. There's something about you. I'm just so happy you're a parent and you're out there advocating as a parent, as a mom,
right?
Four kids. You're a voice for many people. You're very passionate. I do.
And you know what? People, a lot of people don't know this, and I've told this story a couple times, but when I went through my divorce and my son and I got to a pretty toxic place, you know, and I was a toxic parent for a couple years because I was angry and I was sad and my parents were dying. I was trying to take care of everything. And, you know, I had a couple surgeries and I was toxic. And he just said, "You know, Mom, I'm not going to take this anymore." I mean, he got kind of abusive with me. And, you know, I talked to my brother about it and he said, "Just step back." So I kind of let my son go for a few months. My daughter came to stay with me full time. And because I really was toxic to him. And what I realized is this, and this is one of the most important messages I have to parents, especially when they've split up. You've got to love your children more than you are pissed off at your ex, or more than you are angry at, you know, people who have hurt you in your life. You have to put your kids and your relationship with them. So I just pulled back and realized, you know what? My main job is to love you. And he has come around and we have a positive experience now, you know, and it's just, but it took me, you know, because I swore that I would never be toxic with my kids, you know, because my mom was so toxic. And, you know, their early years, I was a great baby mama. I took care of them well, you know, fixed the most fabulous lunches and whatever. But then when my life got stressed, and that's another thing I want to point out to people, oftentimes we try to break those cycles. And then in times of stress, we revert back to negativity that we know that was easy.
Bad habits.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why, you know, yes, I use this platform, but it's because I lived it myself when I was younger, and my poor son, I say my 1.9 million followers are on the back of my poor son and it always makes me cry because, you know, every time I see him, I'm like, "Kiddo, you know," and he's like, yeah. He taught me. And that's another thing. He taught me how to parent him, and he helped me learn to parent. And so does my daughter every day. They teach me how to be a better parent, and I allow them that voice.
You need to get parents. That makes me so happy that you're being vulnerable. I love the term vulnerable and being honest. And we need other parents to sit and take a step back and realize that's what we need to be doing. It's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to share. I'm angry and sad, and I'm sorry that it's coming out at you.
Yes. Just that,
how do we get
that admission, of, you know, I'm hurting. And when kids say, "Why do my parents do that?" They're hurting. They haven't healed their own hurt yet, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's true. You know, if we can just step back and recognize we're not angry at the kid, we're angry at something we can't control in our own lives. And, you know, just saying, "I'm sorry." And sometimes, you know, when I was going through that and kind of recovering, I guess, from toxic parenting, I would literally
healing.
Yes. I would tell my daughter, "Baby, listen, today's a really hard day for me. You have to understand, you know, I've got to see your dad. We've got to go through this thing. Just know I'm going to be a little off and I apologize. But in telling her that, the rest of the day wouldn't be quite as bad because she was a little bit more, you know, she was clued in. It was a tough day. And I was also clued into the fact that, okay, recognizing it might be a worse day, but even saying that out loud sort of gave me like a relief. And then it wasn't quite as bad a day. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, as a principal of a school, I was the parent to all of those kids and I did not do that enough. And I really hope that those families who I know I have hurt and disappointed and let down are seeing that I have really tried to grow from making decisions too quickly by raising my voice, by not being a good enough listener, and that I'm trying to get other principals around the world now to take a step back too and be able to acknowledge that I'm not my best self today. I need to take a sick day. I have to say no at this point to this conversation because I'm trying to make it up to all those families too.
You know, I'm just trying to do my small little part and helping your voice get out there because truly I've rarely met someone who I just feel like I have a servant's heart too, you know, and who just feels like, again, to whom much is given, much is expected, and who feels like living that out. And so what I'm going to have you do before we go is read us a poem because I, you know, kind of
my favorite poem.
Yes, please read us a poem and then I will let you go and I'll kind of do my intro to the podcast and finish it up. But if you will introduce the poet, the time frame he's from, you know, and what this poem kind of means to you or how it applies or why you chose it, and then just read it to us.
Well, I chose my favorite poem obviously is "Oh Captain, My Captain" from Dead Poets Society. And I used to teach the seventh grade like you and do a wonderful poetry anthology and a poetry night. But one of my favorite events I did with the students is we compared "No Man Is an Island," a poem by John Donne, who was like a minister or a preacher way, way, way back, like in the 1700s, against Simon and Garfunkel's song, "I Am a Rock." And they're two completely different perspectives on life. Simon and Garfunkel want to be this strong, single, alone rock. But John Donne says, no man is an island, an entity upon himself. Every man, person, is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less, as well as if a promontory were, as well as any manner of thy friends or thine were own. Any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind. And therefore, never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. It just resonates with me that we're not alone. We can't be alone. We're important. We're part of the puzzle and we're an important piece.
Oh.
And if you get a chance to listen to the Simon and Garfunkel song, "I'm a Rock."
And see, that's that right there is that intertextuality thing, right?
Yeah.
Using one
contrast.
Yep. Using one text to enhance another. Oh, that's just beautiful. And you know, that's that whole thing of if I give to somebody, they have energy to give to somebody else. And we can totally uplift humanity in doing that. Yeah. You know,
no man is an island. That just resonates with me. I wish it said person, obviously.
I know. Right.
Oh my God. This was written hundreds of years ago. And we get that. And I know that my followers know that I really work hard about being gender specific.
Oh, it's difficult though, you know, to be gender neutral. Just for years, we've just, you know, had that language in our brains. Yeah. But anyway, well, Catherine, I truly talking to you uplifts me. And I'm just so thankful that you were willing to do this podcast with me. And I just wish you the most blessed day you can possibly have.
I my heart has grown immensely. I wish you and your followers and your family much love. You and I are going to continue to work together to show that schools and parents and family can truly change the world and make it a much, much, much healthier, richer, more empathetic place.
Ah, bless you so much.
Thank you, Samantha. Yep. I really appreciate it.
You have a good day.
Okay.
Bye. Ah, That was such a fun hour with her, and I hope that you all will use your talents and your gifts to bless others today. Remember, to whom much is given, much is expected. And as always, I hope my middle of nowhere is somewhere close to yours. I've included Dr. Zeisner's tag, that funny professor, so that you can find her on TikTok. Please go give her some love and thank her for sharing her awesome wisdom with us.